Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the causes and effects of the xenophobic violence in South Africa. That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali, and today we are discussing the recent violence in South Africa toward African migrants. The South African government has condemned a recent wave of deadly riots and xenophobic attacks against foreigners. The violence has stoked tensions between Africa's two largest economies. My colleague Paul Ndiho explains.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa condemned a recent wave of deadly riots and xenophobic attacks on homes and businesses of foreign nationals.
No amount of anger and frustration and grievance can justify such acts of wanton destruction and criminality. There can be no excuse for the attacks on the homes and businesses of foreign nationals.
Many Nigerians are living in South Africa were repatriated back home last week following a wave of attacks targeting foreign nationals in Pretoria before spreading to nearby Johannesburg. Both cities have large immigrant populations.
I think it's a shame that in the African continent we still have a situation of blacks killing blacks. It's not something that any African should be proud of. I think it should be embarrassing to us all as Africans.
A free flight carrying nearly 200 Nigerians landed in Nigeria's commercial capital, Lagos, with some of the people on board waving pictures of their burnt shops.
This situation is terrible, my brother, I'm telling you. We are all scared to the point that they go from home to home looking for Nigerians.
The violence has killed at least 12 people, and police said they had arrested more than 700 people in the attacks. Rose Uzama, a Democratic Republic of Congo citizen, boarded the flight with her 5 children, leaving her Nigerian husband behind.
Happy to be Nigerian because what I saw in South Africa, it was terrible. For the past 4 days, I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything because of the fear. Because of the fear of being killed, because of the fear of being attacked, because of the fear of my children being killed or being burnt alive. So I'm happy to be in Nigeria right now.
The surge of anti-foreigner violence has forced some foreign nationals to seek a refuge in a small community hall after being displaced in the east of Johannesburg.
They're scared. But in the news, they are saying the fighting was finished, but we are still fighting. They are fighting with us, even today.
An alleged drug dealer shooting sparked the part of the unrest in South Africa, along with the killing of a taxi driver. Over 50 shops and businesses were destroyed. The shops targeted are mainly owned by Africans from other countries on the continent, such as Nigeria and Somalia.
To see how heartless somebody is. You burn this place, it's not enough for you. You still go back again in the following day evening. Burn the place again, put out more fire.
I knew I couldn't make it because my workshop is damaged. Everything there is burnt and I just had to run away for my life.
South Africa is a major destination for economic migrants from neighboring countries. Those migrants have often endured the most anger from locals frustrated over jobs. However, the latest surge of attacks on businesses and homes is exceptionally troublesome. The embassies of Zimbabwe, Malawi and Mozambique have liaised with the International Organization for Migration to carry out voluntary repatriations. Paul Ndiho, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. Our distinguished guests today are Tilivali Rashitanga, political counselor for the Embassy of South Africa to the United States. From New York, joining us is David Onselio Monda, professor of political science at the City University of New York. And also with us today from Johannesburg, South Africa, is VOA correspondent Anita Powero. Well, I have to say, Anita, David, and Tilivari, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Well, let me come to you immediately, Anita. First of all, good evening. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure talking to you again after a very long time. Now, talk to us about the latest developments on the ground. In other words, give us a sense of the mood from your vantage point.
I believe the South African president said it best. He summed it up in three emotions. That's anger, frustration, and disgust. And there are different motivations behind everybody's feelings, but I think that right now in Johannesburg especially, which is the economic hub of South Africa, we're feeling a mixture of frustration. Both frustration that this keeps happening again and again, frustration on the parts of the people who instigate it, who feel, based on deeply flawed, incorrect premises, that foreign nationals are a threat to their way of life, and then anger on all sides, and then disgust that fellow human beings from the same continent are doing this to each other.
Anita, do you get the sense, or is there any empirical evidence that this type of xenophobic violence is organized, or is it spontaneous?
Ooh, that is the million-dollar question, Shaka. This latest round of xenophobic violence was allegedly sparked by one gentleman from an organization in Johannesburg who was frustrated with lack of service delivery and the usual suspects that come up every once in a while in South Africa. And he took it out on foreigners. He organized a protest, and foreigners bore the brunt of their anger. It has to be said that South African politicians sometimes are not helpful. Sometimes say things that stoke the fires of hatred. But is it organized? I defer to the other guests, but from where I sit, it's not entirely clear.
Why is it particularly black-on-black violence? Because I am reminded of black-on-black violence between what used to be called Inkatha Party and the ANC just before the end of apartheid.
Well, you reference an interesting emotional fact in the psychological history of South Africa, which is that South Africans have a long and unpleasant psychological history of learning to distinguish and feel certain ways about the other, and this is manifesting itself again. But why other Africans? Well, I want to be clear. The Minister of International Affairs, incidentally, has said that we shouldn't call this xenophobia. We should call this Afrophobia. And as I said, this Afrophobia is rooted in deeply flawed assumptions. They're assumptions that really lay bare South Africans' fundamental fears over scarce resources. I'm talking about scarce jobs. I'm talking about scarce services like electricity, water, so on and so forth. And then it runs the gamut. It goes so far as to the pernicious, damaging, horrible rumor, for example, that foreign nationals are stealing South African women, which is, of course, inherently flawed because women are not property. So it's based on these flawed assumptions and this anger among some South Africans that they don't have what they want in life, that these resources are being taken by others. And as I said, that's patently false.
To what extent are the perpetrators of what that gentleman refers to as Afrophobia, to what extent do those people remember that the people they are targeting come from African countries whose governments stood with them by their side during the struggle against apartheid?
I think if you pose that question to somebody who is in the process of looting or burning down a shop belonging to a foreign national, they might reveal that they have other more pressing concerns, unemployment, lack of resources, poverty, inequality. And as a result of that, sometimes it's hard to see the big story when you're hungry, when you're tired, when you're angry. And so I do see that a lot on the streets of Johannesburg and Pretoria, that people's memories are very short. And they're not thinking about the leadership and, you know, the historic partnerships between Mozambique's Frelimo and South Africa's ANC and the multiple African countries that hosted the band ANC. They're not thinking about that. They're thinking, I'm hungry, I'm angry, and here's a place to take out my anger.
Final question, Anita. There have been some reports that some elements of the South African police have in fact been enablers of that type of violence. Any empirical evidence that you have seen?
Well, we've seen this previously in South Africa, and in, I guess you could say isolated incidents, but maybe it is, if we looked closer, it could be systemic, in criticisms of how the South African police force treats foreign nationals. There was a very memorable, horrible case, I believe it was in 2013, when a Mozambican national was arrested by South African police and dragged behind a truck, and he died. And these are tales that you do hear, that South African police are harder on foreign nationals than they are on South African nationals. And there may be some truth to that. We have seen worrying reports of the way that South African police handle foreign nationals versus South Africans.
On that note, Anita, thank you very, very much for your insight.
Thank you.
And good luck. Let me come to you immediately.
I
want to
listen.
Yes, it is.
How are you?
I'm good, and how are you?
I am hugely terrific, and I have to say that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
You're welcome.
You're most welcome. It is very interesting that I also met someone you call your brother in Johannesburg, at former South African President Thabo Mbeki's residence in Johannesburg. Very interesting. Let me ask you a question. I asked Anita about reports, for example, suggesting that there have actually been elements of the South African police who have acted as enablers of violence. How do you respond to that?
You know, thank you. We come from a very difficult past, which is, if you quantify it, 25 years from where we come from. We were a police force whose training was to use force as a means to extract whatever information. And if you look at where we come from to where we are, one of the things that we did as an attempt to change this police symbolic change was to move it from being called the South African Police Force to the South African Police Service. That is community-based.
Serving people.
So, and whether there's evidence, if there is, let it be brought in case if there are those who are doing that which is wrong. I mean, you might have picked up that, I think a month ago, if not more than that, when there was a standoff between the foreign nationals in Johannesburg, when the police were to move in to do what is expected of them by the Constitution.
Mm.
When there was a realization that whatever that is going to happen, that was these foreign nationals were carrying stones and whatever that they were carrying, our police retreated back, because in foreseeing that whatever that is going to come here, it will not be nice. There might be elements of criminality amongst our police service, but where there are those, they are dealt with swiftly. I'll tell you what I'm saying is the incident that I just made reference to. After the police got into Johannesburg, inner city, to deal with counterfeit goods, they did an operation on a day. The following day, there were police who were trying to sell the stuff, and they were arrested. There might be elements of wrongdoings, where they are found to be in the wrong, our system deals with them. We have a watchdog entity called the Police Investigation IPID, Independent Police Investigation Unit, that deals with wrongdoings of the police.
Mm-hmm.
And those three were arrested on that day. They were handed to the authorities to be dealt with.
Correct.
Yes.
Have you also heard that there are some police officers who have been caught on tape engaged in activities such as looting, for example?
Oh, I've not heard of those, but of course we have read of wrongdoings by the police. As we follow in social media and other news outlets,
it's not by any measure a government policy.
No. Police are expected to conduct themselves as the Constitution expects of them. We call them men and women in blue because they represent peace.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever they go, they need to be arbiters where civilians can't find one another. They need to maintain peace and order. South Africans, including those who are our visitors, can go on with their lives without fear of anything.
But how do you respond to some people who are saying, yes, government officials are talking the talk, but are not in fact walking that particular talk?
Well, the president has taken a lead on the matter. One, condemning wrongdoing by those who might be aggrieved by whatever it is. And by the way, South Africa, as prescribed in our constitution, we are a country that does not seclude people to put them in camps because they are foreigners.
Mm.
But our constitution enjoins us to integrate people in our communities. As it is now, the president is leading a social cohesion program that is aimed at integrating and bringing South Africans from all walks of life. You know that, no, we are a country that has about 12 languages
mm-hmm.
and dialects, therefore.
Mm.
Meaning that, no, with that added, with where we come from, having opened our borders after 94 to get foreign nationals to come and do business in South Africa, and also encouraging tourists to come in, you'll want our local people to understand that South Africa does not exist in a vacuum. But added to that, one of the principles in our foreign policy after 94, it says that South Africa cannot isolate, cannot operate or exist as an island of prosperity in a sea of poverty. And what does that mean? It means that South Africa on its own can be a power base, industrialized, and enjoy the trade with its neighbors without getting the neighbors to come on board. Hence, we spearheaded the integration of our own region, that we need to integrate, allow for the movement of goods and people around our neighbors.
Are you talking about SADC?
SADC, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But over and above that, after this realization, when we joined, or rather, one of the things that we did when we got accepted back to the Organization of African Unity, we spearheaded the reform process of the AU to ensure that the AU, as OAU as it was then, that had a political mandate.
Mm.
It also needs to look at the economies of the region through economic integration, but also encouraging member states to look at a program that both ourselves, Nigeria, and other countries spearheaded, that then became called the New Partnership for Africa's Development. document that encourages all of us to look at common things that are inhibiting us from reaching what we need to reach.
I see.
That, no, if we all embrace the new economic partnership as a blueprint for development, including the peer review mechanism that we've all adopted as a continent, that will look at issues of governance to ensure that, no, whilst we also accept that, no, migration is an issue that the entire world is dealing with, we also need to ensure that, no, in our own backyards, as member states of the African Union, we get our ducks in a row, because we're all signatories to all sort of conventions that the AU has put in place.
Correct.
Issues of good governance, peer review mechanism, so that we can deal with issues from origin, so that they don't first then become a continental problem.
Thank
so
you.
So it's not just a talk. We also play our part in the continent to ensure that, no, we all use the same scale when we're being measured.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's go to the good professor in New York. David, are you there?
Yes, I can hear you well. Thank you.
Now, David, you recently spent about 3 months in South Africa conducting research, correct?
Yes, I did.
What kind of research were you conducting?
So we're essentially looking at the impact of xenophobia on the ability of African migrants to set up businesses in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the opportunity to interact with a whole range of stakeholders, not only in the nonprofit, but also, public citizens, regular South African citizens, and also immigrants. And while the flare-up of the xenophobic violence happened shortly after I left, while I was in South Africa over the 3 months, there were a lot of reports of sporadic killings of African migrants, foreigners, in the townships, in Soweto, in Alexandria. And this flare-up really blew up, a few weeks ago into the full-blown violence. So, if I may, I'd just like to make a few comments in relation to what you talked about before, specifically in relation to this question of where is this violence coming from? From my observation on the ground, I could clearly see a very organized and systemic creation of this violence at three levels. There was the organized violence by the South African Truck Drivers Union towards targeting the trucks that were being driven by foreigners, mainly from Zimbabwe and Mozambique. And they were burning trucks that were transporting product from the ports inland and also those going towards the ports. Secondly, there has been statements by Goodwill Zwelithini, a lot of the Zulu leaders, that have been very anti-migrant and have tended to blame migrants for a lot of the problems in South Africa today. And thirdly is the hand of the police, because it's very surprising that a country as sophisticated as South Africa, with the military and the police size that we have in South Africa, to be unable to quell this violence. You wonder where the intelligence of the police is, the ability of the police to actually get to know this violence before it happens. So there is a very troubling trend here in terms of where this violence is coming from and how it is happening, and the lack of state intervention in providing a remedy and security, not only for foreigners, but also for South Africans.
As you did your research, David, what were you able to identify as the fundamental root causes of that problem?
I think I mainly address three main challenges. I think the first and biggest problem is the lack of the South African government's honest ability to call this what it is, which is xenophobic violence. Sometimes the president and a lot of the ministers have hidden behind these cliches of criminality. But I think it's about time that the country has a national narrative and dialogue about this problem of xenophobia. Yes, the South African representative next to you talks about the African Renaissance, about SADC and building African unity. But all these are very top-level pronouncements that really don't feed down to the ground. fundamentally at the ground, South Africans are very frustrated by the rising levels of unemployment. The inequality is particularly a big problem. And unfortunately, a lot of African migrants who end up competing with South Africans for low-level jobs, whether it's working in hotels, whether it's cleaning jobs, or whether it's just hawking on the streets, they're competing with South Africans. And a lot of local South Africans who are poor in the townships feel very neglected. And every time we have this xenophobic violence, I think this is one of the symptoms to a deeper problem of lack of the government intervention in terms of providing opportunity for some of the poorest South Africans on the ground.
So, David, if I understood you correctly, are you suggesting here that when it comes to South African government authorities, what they really lack is what one could call the fundamental will?
I would say that. I would say it's the lack of fundamental will. But I think there's a second and deeper and more sinister problem, because there's this bogeyman in the room. In other words, migrants are a very easy target that can be blamed for the lack of the government's provision of these very basic services and creation of jobs. You know, the South African representative talked about corruption of counterfeit goods. But that begs the question, how are these goods coming in illegally into the country? It speaks to lack of regulation at the port cities. And then the second element of that is in relation to protection of businesses. A lot of the big businesses, corporate businesses, never suffered violence. But a lot of the low-level, informal businesses, mainly run by a lot of these African migrants, were targeted. So I think systemically and from a government policy point of view, the will to confront this problem of xenophobia and to specifically address the issue of job creation, I think is a very, very fundamental and major challenge.
Thank you very much, Tilivari. You heard it. Is it possible that, in fact, yes, while the authorities may be talking the talk, that perhaps, as David points out, at least based on his 3 months of research in your country, that there is probably the apparent lack of fundamental political will, given that the economic indicators are down?
Well, political will should also be equated with the political will to allow people in.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm saying is that no.
But that once they are in, they need protection.
No, that's true.
I mean, their property and their life.
No, not true. I mean, that's why we reported last week of measures that the police have embarked on. Number of people have been arrested in Johannesburg, Pretoria, and Durban.
I have seen those reports.
Yeah. Of course,
some police officers, as a matter of fact, have been prosecuted.
Yes. Now, whilst we... And, you know, we welcome the research that the professor has worked on. It will also help us to give us insights of what is going on. Because part of the problem, it's the migration. And I hear the professor talking about big business. And we have structural issues as a country, both in our economy. And hence, for the better part of what we do, there are things that we try and address: structural inequality,
right?
Ease of doing business, bringing in small players in the business, and these African migrants also become part of the small players who also want to become part of the big players in the economy. Now it's regulation. And the other reality that we don't talk about, these small businesses, they're not registered. They don't pay tax. But that's not justification for wrongdoings.
Those issues should be taken by essentially looking at the laws.
No, true.
Yeah.
But you see, being who we are as South Africans, we attract everybody in. With an understanding that whatever happens, no, whatever people do, it will be done within the ambit of the law.
Mm.
I'm not in a point to pronounce on what government is going to do, but there's work that is going to be done to regularize people are there, regularize businesses that are bachelor. Because our understanding that, because these are people who come, these migrants that we have in South Africa are in many folds. You have people who are moving away from their countries for reasons that are known better. Mm. Either they are being, it's asylum seekers.
That happens all over the place.
Yeah, you have economic migrants.
Yes, it happens in Europe.
Yeah,
happens all over the place.
So what I'm saying, whilst there is this insinuation that there's no political will to deal with the issues, I mean,
to what extent does an average South African citizen view an African immigrant in South Africa as someone that is coming to add some value, help to create employment, for example, and what have you, as opposed to taking away their opportunities?
Well, I mean, African immigrants are seen as they add value to our economy. I mean, if you look at the creation of Johannesburg for where it is now,
right?
Johannesburg was created by immigrants because of the discovery of diamond and gold.
Throughout your history, as a matter of fact.
Yes, but if you look at in the 90s, again, we opened up the textile sector and also small businesses in the cities, in town, Bramfontein, for instance, and go to Johannesburg. It's mainly it's immigrants who are selling there. If you walk on small street,
yes,
it's immigrants, and they're employing locals.
You also have a lot of foreigners, and I might say African professionals. We are talking here about doctors.
Correct.
We're talking about engineers.
Correct.
Professors at some of your major prestigious universities.
No, not true. Look at, for instance, now banking sector. We are beneficiaries of skills from outside. Zimbabweans, for instance,
yes,
they're in our banking sector.
Yes.
Professors. I was taught by Kenyan professors at VETS.
The hotel industry.
The hotel industry.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, we, and these guys have integrated. You know, people have families in South Africa. Irrespective of where they come from.
Artists like, for example, the late Lucky Dube.
Yes.
You know, he was from Zimbabwe.
Yes.
But he was a South African for practical purposes.
And that's why, for instance, if you look at what we did, I think, in 2007, 2008, after a realization of the situation in our northmost neighbor, We created a dispensation for the Zimbabwean economic migrants to get permits that they renew after every third or 5 years. Mozambicans, we have not gotten there, but
we are talking about millions of people.
Millions of people are on our shore. So what I'm saying, it might as well be that the root cause and what we see are either a response of there's somewhere we pick up there's a response of criminality. Because we have areas in Johannesburg which are no-go areas. Rosettenville, Hillbrow.
Yes, I've been to Hillbrow.
So I'm saying there is that we need to deal with. And we need to deal with it within the ambit of the law. Mm. And one of the things that we've done over the years is to get embassies where these guys come from.
Well, I'm afraid that time happens not to be our best ally.
Mm.
We'll come to that later.
Mm.
You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about, sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives.
topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules. It's time for Our Voices with me, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, world leaders gather in New York for the United Nations General Assembly. Plus, can farming become a vehicle for change and lift millions out of poverty? An African-led initiative is making a difference. Growing Africa's agriculture on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today, we are discussing the recent xenophobic violence in South Africa. Our guests are Tilivali Rashitanga, political counselor for the Embassy of South Africa to the United States. And joining us from New York is David Onserio Monda, professor of political science at the City University of New York. I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Well, I'm afraid that when it comes to Straight Talk Africa, there's no democracy in this studio. When a producer tells you to go, you have to go like a good soldier. So I hope that...
pay the bills.
Yes, I hope you'll find some space in your gorgeous South African heart and soul to forgive me for that.
Certainly.
Could you please pick up from where you left?
I was saying that we beneficiaries of the continent's goodwill in many respects. With the second last country to be liberated.
Mm.
And if it wasn't because of the generosity that came from the continent,
from the brothers and sisters of the continent,
you know, I don't think we'd have been there. I mean, and the diaspora, including your African Americans and other, I mean, we are a product of that generosity.
I hear you.
Therefore, that's why when we confronted with the reality, or when we're happy, we reach out to the world, say, look, we have this situation. What is it that we have learned the following from you? Can you give us more insights on how to deal with the situation? And, you know, it's our reality is that, no, we also have an unemployment rate that is worrying.
Skyrocketing.
Yeah, skyrocketing. It's worrying.
Especially among the young, the youth.
And two, how do you balance off between your own locals,
mm-hmm.
and still extend your goodwill to your migrants? So we need to strike a balance, right?
Yes.
So, but having said that, we remain indebted to the world.
But you have to be. You have to keep thinking about the saying, for example, that if wealth is gone, nothing is gone. If health is gone, something is gone. But if character and integrity are gone, everything is gone.
No, you're very right. And I'm sure it takes two to tango.
True.
That the sooner we all, in our own respective sovereign...
And you are the repository of what is culturally very important in the African tradition, Ubuntu.
You are because I am.
You are because I am. I am because you are.
Yeah. So hence, from 1994 up to where we are now, we have opened our borders because we didn't want to be this place that is a no-go area.
Well, I hate to say it again, Mr. Rashitanga, but again, time is not our best ally. Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. And we have Joanna LeBlanc from the United States. Joanna, how are you today?
I am doing very well, Shaka. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're most welcome. What is your question or statement?
Yeah, my statement is that I have a couple of points that I want to make. One is that... are we really properly using the proper terminology to explain what is taking place in South Africa, right? Because when you break down the definition of xenophobia, right, xeno means what? Foreign or foreigners. Phobia means fear of. So in my opinion, if this were truly xenophobia, black South Africans in South Africa will be attacking white foreigners, Indians, black African-American foreigners, but yet they are only attacking their fellow brothers and sisters who are from Nigeria, Zimbabwe, Malawi, you name it. So are we really utilizing the proper terminology to explain what is happening in South Africa? Or should we really call it what it is, black-on-black crime? And another point that I want to make is that what is happening in South Africa is nothing that just happened yesterday. This has been going on in South Africa for a very long time. In fact, Papa Madiba is probably rolling in his grave right now as we speak. The father of the liberation movement, Papa Madiba did not fight, did not go to jail, did not suffer so that black South Africans can behave the way that they are behaving towards other black Africans. And second, what is happening in South Africa, it appears to be a global phenomenon because, as we know, there is something similar happening in the Bahamas after the storm there as it pertains to Haitian immigrants living in the Bahamas. So this is nothing but fight for resources, and they are looking at each other as a scapegoat instead of looking at the system that is oppressing the people in South Africa and other places all over the world.
I think your point is very well made. Essentially, you are saying really that why should an African be a foreigner in Africa, if I get you correct?
Not only that, I think that we are using the wrong terminology to describe what is taking place in South Africa. Because if it were truly xenophobia, white foreigners will be attacked, right?
Yes.
And there are African Americans who live there. There are Indians, right?
I'm sure they would be attacked, but they are probably in different lanes.
Exactly. So the people who are being attacked are black Africans from other African countries. So is this really not black-on-black crime, or is it really xenophobia? I think that we need to coin another term to explain what is happening in South Africa currently and all over the world.
As a matter of fact, Anita had told us at the beginning of the program that there was, I think, a South African politician who would have agreed with you by saying that it perhaps should be called Afrophobia as opposed to xenophobia.
And I agree with that. That could be a potential terminology we should look at to explain what is happening in South Africa and other places all over the world, not just South Africa. Because right now what is happening is a fight for resources, thinking that if this Nigerian is deported back to Nigeria, or if this Malawian is deported back to Malawi, that you will get a job, or you will have access to livable wages, or your children will have access to quality education, when in fact they can deport every single Nigerian, every single Malawian back to their respective countries, and Black South Africans will continue to suffer because we have systemic issues in South Africa. It is not your brothers and sisters who are taking away jobs from you. These are systemic issues, systemic oppression that must be dismantled in South Africa.
Thank you very much, Joanna. David, how do you respond to that? As a matter of fact, there is another school of thought which says that perhaps what African leaders really should urgently do is to remove the artificial borders and boundaries which were put in place in 1884 in Berlin by the German Chancellor Bismarck. Your reaction?
So I think, your caller raised some very important points, but I think it's very important that we shouldn't conflate black-on-black violence with what is happening in South Africa. What's happening in South Africa is xenophobia. That's exactly what the name is. Black-on-black violence would have been black South Africans going after each other. But in the xenophobic attacks, this fear of foreigners based on their country of origin, we specifically see, even in the clips you showed, Nigerian shops being attacked, Senegalese shops being attacked, Somali shops being attacked. And even in other cities like Durban, in years past, Bangladeshi and Chinese shops have been attacked, but not to the extent to which the businesses and local shops of black Africans from other African countries are being attacked. So I really think it's important that we're careful not to trivialize this violence and call it black on black violence, because this is specifically xenophobia. This is a targeting of African migrants based on their national origin. And I think to a second point, to your earlier discussion, there's also levels of this interaction of violence. So a lot of the xenophobic violence, unfortunately, targets those who are at the lowest rungs of the economic structure. In other words, those who are competing with South Africans for jobs that have the fewest barriers to entry.
Like so
the hotel businesses, the cleaning jobs, where you don't really. You don't really need a lot of certification. You don't need a lot of qualifications. Yes, if you're a professor, a lawyer, a doctor, that's a separate level of skills. But those are, that's a smaller group of Africans that end up going to South Africa. The larger percentage of the migrants are these people with, basic skills that are really just trying to improve their lives. And lastly, the point I'd like to make is this broader narrative of SADC. The embassy official talked about regional integration. Rather than President Ramaphosa sending envoys out to apologize for the violence, I was really looking for a policy statement to address this problem rather than talk about the symptoms. For example, a regional coordinated, SADC coordinated initiative to allow for migrants who have certain skills to be able to be regularized, documented, and get into the country through official border posts. That way, if they're able to, work, to live, and we're able to guarantee certain work standards and certain benefits for them. So really, a regional integration structure would be a lot more meaningful. And lastly, South Africa needs to be careful about its neighbors. When things are going wrong in Zimbabwe, I think it's very important that the political leadership in South Africa stand up and tell the neighbors where things are going wrong, like in Zimbabwe, that this cannot go on, because a lot of the political problems in Zimbabwe, the economic migrants who are fleeing the economic deterioration in Zimbabwe, end up in South Africa and end up facing a lot of this xenophobic violence. So very broadly, that needs to be very systemic. SADC-led initiatives to address this problem, but we also really need to identify that this is not just black-on-black violence. This is something deeper that speaks to fear of other Africans from other countries, and because of their black skin, they are being targeted in these xenophobic violence attacks.
What else did you find out that perhaps persuaded you to issue some recommendations in your research?
I think one of the other big problems I found out in speaking with a lot of African migrants, and in full disclosure, I'm from Kenya, and when I was in South Africa, you know, I was a migrant in that country, and God forbid, had I stayed for an extra week before I left, I may have been the person being attacked on those streets. So I think one of the big things I found out was this bigger problem of the protection gaps. And by this I mean the challenges asylum seekers, for example, experience between that point when they file for their asylum and they're actually guaranteed or given refugee status. There's that limbo period within which they can't work. A lot of their children, unfortunately, Shaka, can't go to school because they don't have or they can't get proper documentation. And this ends up spiraling and creating an even worse problem because you're having this generation of young kids of migrants, some of whose parents end up dying, and their parents, they don't have any parents. So, you know, you end up having these very tragic stories of children who have no parents or have a single parent. They can't go to school because they don't have the paperwork to get into school. And I think really this issue of the protection gaps and ease to access to documentation from the South African government is something I think that we really need to think about.
What about developments, for example, in countries like Nigeria, where you have retaliatory violent acts against South African businesses, like MTN, for example, like some of their sophisticated shopping malls in Lagos?
Yes, I think, again, very broadly in terms of a regional and continental context, South Africa is a signatory to the UN Convention of 1951 on Refugees, the OAU 1969 Convention in terms of protection of refugees and their status. But more broadly in terms of the continent, really thinking about how South Africa can see the rest of the continent as an access, as a market, and as a source for human capital that can really not only advance the South African economy, but can also benefit a lot of the African countries in the region. These retaliatory attacks really show that in an integrated world, a lot of the violence of South Africans against other African migrants will face retaliatory attacks that will interfere with South African interests. So I really think at a governmental level, this discussion really needs to be had in terms of regularizing a lot of the migrants and providing an ease of access for individuals and humans to be able to move across borders regularly and in an official manner, so that the South African government actually knows who is and is not in their country.
Thank you very much. Let me come to you, Tilivari. What about some who are suggesting that perhaps the South African government hasn't done enough with what they call civic education, that perhaps the government should try and sensitize the ordinary South Africans about the non-threatening and the importance of their brothers and sisters from across the borders?
Well, civic education is ongoing at different levels, school level, around who we are, who are we as South Africans, our identity.
Where are we coming from?
Where are we coming from? It's ongoing. I think at hand here as it is now. What government has started doing from last week, it's a multifaceted stakeholder engagement. Mm. Society, faith-based organization, to just sensitize people about who we are and what is that we're doing. Added to that, and I agree with something that the professor said around regulations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, one of the things that we have as a country, anybody who's a professional who's going to South Africa, if it's a scarce skill that we need, they'll attest with it. You go through a normal, rigorous process and you
correct.
Get there. All the people who are professionals, we know where they
are. There are so many there.
Yeah,
so many of them.
Yeah, we know where they are and stuff like that. For me, the issue at hand, Shaka, is that, see, if we all, as a continent, commit to norms and standards, as stipulated by the African Union, that we all meet we meet twice a year in Addis Ababa.
Mm.
No, either we meet in Addis Ababa and then the third country.
Mm.
Around issues of governance.
Mm.
Because, you see, the reason why we're in this situation is because these people are moving from their countries of origin because there are no opportunities.
There are forces that push.
Yeah, there are forces that push.
Forces that pull,
you know,
and lead to South Africa.
Yes, and then if you look at, for instance, at Agenda 2063 and what it says and what is that we need to do, what kind of an Africa do we want to see in the next 50 years? It's an Africa that we've committed, firstly, that we need to silence the gun by 2020.
In fact, if you look at it in the broad context, you put your fingers right there, because not only are you having some Africans dying in South Africa, but you are having a lot of Africans, in fact, dying in the Mediterranean,
Mediterranean
Sea,
yes.
In their attempt to cross and go to Europe for what some call greener pastures.
Yes.
So where is the African leadership?
You see, so because I mean,
when we need it really,
yeah, I mean, if
to create conditions that will make their people comfortable, so that they can develop their countries and the continent.
Correct. So I'm saying, for me, the root cause of this is an inability by us as a continent to adhere to what we have signed on as members of the African Union. I mean, it's not enough to just have elections that do not meet certain standards.
Precisely.
Because if you do that, and then you have elections that do not meet basic standards.
Most African countries really go through what some would call selections, not elections.
Is
because
it
their results do not reflect the will
of the people,
of the voter.
Yes. So when you have that, people are then forced to move.
Unfortunately, once again, time is not our best ally. And on that note, our guests today were Tilivari Rashitanga, David Onsorio Monda, and VOA correspondent Anita Powell. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Learning.